The Christmas party invite says smart casual, but what does that mean when it's 35 degrees and there are storms on the way? And why are thongs acceptable in a Queensland office setting, but you would never catch anyone in Sydney with their toes out at work? There's no doubt our weather and our cultural trends influence what we wear, but how much personal freedom do we really have when we're getting dressed? Alex Haslam, a professor of social and organisational psychology at the University of Queensland. Alex, welcome to Life Matters.
Great to be here, Tegan, yeah.
Do dress standards still exist? It feels like you can wear a lot more chill stuff than you used to be able to.
Yeah, I mean, the short answer to that question is absolutely. I mean, dress is all about norms and standards and sort of values and identity, and it's all about projecting yourself onto the world. So as long as we dress, there'll always be standards. But of course, standards can also be violated in particular ways, but they're always done with reference to an understanding that we kind of share about what's appropriate and what constitutes a violation. But as you indicated in your opening comments, that these things change and they're negotiable and they vary from group to group and place to place.
Yeah, Australian culture likes to think of itself as being maybe a little bit more laid back than, say, Europe, where the UK. Does that play out in how we dress?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sometimes joke I moved to Australia because I didn't like wearing a tie. And that's another reason why I became an academic. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, but again, the informal can mean lots of different things. And I think it doesn't mean we don't dress up and we don't kind of do informality. So the interesting thing about those things is the ways in which they're shared. And even in groups that have, you know, on the face of it, very limited kind of rules, they're actually, when you observe them in an anthropological or psychological sense, they're often quite bounded, and there are things that you can't do. For example, if you're in a group that likes to kind of like be liberal in their dress, well, if you dress formally, that will be seen as some kind of statement of some sort. And so, yeah, that's those kind of dynamics play out, you know, on a daily basis. And as again, as you alluded to at the start of the talk, they can sometimes really come to the fore in moments where these things suddenly seem to be more negotiable, like the festive season, where you suddenly have to really think about them. What does it mean to interpret this particular set of rules that this person has handed down in this particular context or the guidelines?
That's the thing I'm thinking about. This time of year, it's often parties, Christmas parties. Lots of people get married in the summer, but it's also this time of year where our weather can be so horrible to anyone who wants to wear anything that covers their arms or legs. We sort of have this push and pull between what we usually would have interpreted as a formal dress code and the nature of our climate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you put it very clearly. I mean, I think that there's this utility aspect to clothing, like what's the weather going to be like today? But again, how am I going to be these different, or, you know, how am I going to get some sort of constancy in what I'm trying to achieve? And I think particular kind of events like weddings bring, and, you know, and maybe form meetings in office or something, bring those things to fore where, you know, oh, I'm going to have to get there through the rain. So you're going to have to negotiate all of those things. One thing I think we do often in those situations where there's sort of relatively sort of high degree of uncertainty is talk about them amongst ourselves. So work out, like, how are you going to solve this problem? And I think that's also a way of dealing with the uncertainty about, like, will I look out of place or will it be acceptable if I don't? So I think, you know, for people looking for advice, I mean, I think that's pretty, is just ask someone else, like, what, who's going, who think has more status within the group or whatever it is. And of course we do that all the time. And we check, what do I look like in this, or is this the right thing, or should I wear these things tomorrow? These are conversations we have all the time.
I got an invite to an event a little while ago and it said formal on the dress code. And then the day before the event, they sent out an email being like, if you want to wear a suit, you don't have to wear like black tie, and women can wear knee length dresses if you want, which maybe for some people was freeing. But the conversations I was having with my fellow attendees was, what a shame. Like, you don't often get a chance to really go all out. I live in Brisbane, and it was sort of felt like it was going to be a fun excuse to really dress up, and that was sort of taken away from us.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, again, I think the key point there is actually, aside from the fact that it can cause anxiety, we like opportunities to kind of dress up. And that's part of what makes events of like weddings, for example, special, is the fact you prepare for them and so on. And maybe you act out a different version of yourself in collaboration with, you know, friends and acquaintances. So, I think that's right. I think it's a peculiar form of sort of identity performance that you see in those situations. And as you say, that particular story is a kind of like, that was a bit of a blow, because I just have to be normal old me. You know, well, I can do that 364 days a year. So how about on this one day I get to do something a bit special? And I think we do look forward to those events. Graduations are another kind of thing, of the same sort of thing. If they said, well, come in thongs and a t-shirt to graduation, I think it would lose a certain amount of it, not only sort of gravitas, but also the idea of it as a sort of as a special sort of occasion, and as something that, you know, is going to be memorable in a particular way. So I think we also, you know, those events as a kind of focus for future memories is critical. So we dress up and we take more photographs precisely so we have a recollection of this version of ourselves that we can share when necessary.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, talking to Professor Alex Haslam from the University of Queensland about dress codes. Alex, there was a recent thing in the US where the government launched a new campaign around air travel, and one of the key issues was dressing with respect. And the Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, was saying, let's try not to wear slippers and pyjamas as we come to the airport. Is it respectful of other people to be dressed in a certain way when we go out?
I think that's, you know, really that, you know, what is respect and what counts as respectful or being disrespectful, I think is very, I mean, I've seen, I don't know, I'm sure everybody's seen like people in onesies on planes and so on. I mean, I think, okay. You know, like, but I think those guidelines are interpreted with a huge amount of latitude, and again, I think that they're often not just about the clothing, but the demeanor of the person. Like, you know, so are you wearing this to upset us, or is this just you being you? You know, so I think I feel sympathy for the people who are going to have to interpret those rules when someone gets on a plane in, you know, thongs or whatever it is, or a t-shirt or something, or they haven't got a collar. I mean, but again, I always think like there's lots of places actually around the place which have those guidelines. I don't think I've ever seen anybody ever enforce them, you know, whether it's a golf club or whatever it might be, or even, you know, you go to a nice bar and it says this, that, and the other. I think people sort of orient to them. But again, I think it would be rather exceptional for people to actually enforce them in any way. They're meant to be, I think, sort of proactive and give you a sense of like what you're meant to be doing in the place. But again, I think on planes, you know, the question like, well, do I get changed into pajamas and so on? I mean, I think sometimes you don't want to be the first person to do that, right? So I think, again, we look around to others to a guide of like what sense, to get a sense of what's appropriate. And again, in those situations where these things are fluid, or like we haven't been there before, where we're much more likely to do that, I think. But again, those events where we're authorized to dress up differently, you know, whatever that might be, as fancy dress or as zombies or anything like that, are things that we kind of enjoy and celebrate. And again, that's sort of part of being human, is using dress in these collectively creative ways. That's what fashion is, isn't it? I mean, fashion is the ability to cultivate a new sense of dress that projects new identities onto the world.
So on the text line, someone's put in a pretty spicy question. Are these sorts of dress codes a sort of caste system, a different lingo? What do you reckon, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're doing all that sort of stuff. They're projecting hierarchies and in-groups and out-groups and all those types of things. And I think groups also routinely sort of change their dress codes subtly to exclude particular people, you know, Johnny-come-latelys or whatever it might be, so that we can be we, and we can have this sort of tight sense of us, and we can exclude those other people who we don't want to be part of us. And that can be both kind of horizontal and vertical, if you like, in the sense of it's like, we're going to differentiate ourselves from people who we perceive to be inferior to us, but just groups who are perhaps a little bit too similar to us, well, it's important for us to get some sort of distinctiveness into who we are. So we're going to veer off in this alternative direction. But yeah, I think those things are going on all the time. And of course, they're realized formally in different cultures in different kinds of ways and have been, forever and a day.
I asked you to tell me what the dress code is in your city, and I'm very much enjoying what you're writing to me. Chris says, I went to the city in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago and felt like I was in a film noir. Everyone seemed to be dressed in grey, black, navy and beige. The CBD in Melbourne seems like a dark place at the moment. Is that the fashion nowadays? To which I would say, Chris, I think Melbourne's been wearing black since before black was invented. Another says, we live in a small rural town where no one wears shoes unless they absolutely have to. Smart casual is wearing more than stubby shorts. My husband wears shorts all year round, where I don't like wearing shorts at all. Another says, many years ago, I moved to the Gold Coast and was invited to a party. It was to be formal. I asked what sort of clothes I should wear, and they said, well, the boys will be wearing shoes. So that gives you a sense of formal there. Alex, in general, is overdressing better than underdressing? Should we always be wearing shoes?
I think your call is probably right there. I think it depends on the context. Like, yeah, sometimes shoes can be being overdressed, but I think the beauty of clothing and more generally apparel is there are rules, but there are no rules. And these things, so should you be I think, in the scheme of things, you want to be somewhere in the middle. Or you want a sort of Goldilocks kind of experience, but sometimes you want to overdress and sometimes you maybe the opposite. So I think these things change a lot with context. They change hugely as a function of the groups that you're in, but also what you're trying to do in relation to those groups. Like, are you trying to lead them in some way, take them in some new direction? Iconoclastic or what, all that sort of stuff. But before coming on this program, I was thinking if you were going to ask me what advice I should give anybody, I think it's almost impossible to give people advice about clothing because you can pretty much always think about the opposite, the context in which to doing the opposite would make more sense. What you can do, I just think, is observe really interesting regularities and kind of points of tension that we all experience in clothing, where we suddenly realize we have a decision to make and it will have particular implications. A good example is going for a job interview where you think, okay, they don't know me, I don't know them. Obviously, how I dress is going to be pretty important. So, what kind of jewelry am I going to wear, or am I going to wear a suit, and all this sort of stuff, and those points really bring these various issues we're discussing into focus, and we have to sort of make a decision about who we are going to be or who present as and what kind of relationship we want to forge or signal with the people that we're going to be interacting with.
Here on the text line, Lisa says, I think it's a mark of disrespect for people, institutions or businesses when the dress is not considered. What a dull life to wear dress down most times rather than dress up sometimes. Another says, Janet says, my sister-in-law wore shorts to my sit-down dinner. We had a giggle when she continually stuck to her leather chair. And another person decreeing, thongs belong at the beach or near water. Nowhere else are they acceptable footwear. I will pass that message directly on to Life Matters executive producer Lachlan McIntosh. She loves wearing thongs to work. Alex, thank you so much for joining me.
Great. It's great to talk to you. Yeah.
Alex Haslam is a professor of social and organisational psychology at the University of Queensland.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.